Welcome to another Books and Culture podcast with Books and Culture's editor, John Wilson. I'm Stan Guthrie. And this week, John, we're going to be looking at a new book by Daniel Taylor. It's called The Skeptical Believer.
That's right, Stan. This book connects with Dan's first book, which was published in the 1980s and has been reissued since, and is a book that has made a significant impact on a lot of people I know, called The Myth of Certainty. This new book, The Skeptical Believer, which is the subject of my column in the May-June issue of Books and Culture, is a wonderful book to get and put down by your bed and have it within reach. It's made up of more than 80 chapters, and the chapters are very short. And even though there's an overarching continuity to the book, you can read each bit independently, you can hop around, and I think that many of our listeners would get a lot from it. My interest in the book doesn't just have to do with what Dan has to say, though that is the most important thing. The fact that I'm reading a book that is by someone who I've known for more than 40 years, we met in the fall of 1968 when I transferred to Westmont College, and I was in my junior year. I had just gotten married. Dan had been at Westmont all along, and we've known each other ever since. Our families have grown up together. So on the one hand, you might say, well, why are you talking about this book that you have such a close relationship to the author? You can't really be objective about it. And that led me to some interesting thoughts. A few years ago, I don't know exactly when it was, but there was a flurry of writing by people who taught in English departments that mixed personal experience and some elements of memoir with reading of literary texts. Mm-hmm. And most of the people, not all, but most of the people who wrote these books were women. And there was a big kerfuffle at the time. A number of people said, oh, this is just the epitome of the decadence of our culture. And these people, instead of focusing on the texts, they're using whatever the text might be as a way to talk about themselves, and they're so narcissistic, and on and on and on. It was really awful. Well, I read some of these books, and I thought some of them were very narcissistic, and others weren't. And I didn't really see them overall as representing some terrible decadence any more than the work of the previous generation of literary critics. If you took 10 books from that bunch of scholars, you would find several that were pretty mediocre, you know, some that were really bad. I think that we're often given in life false choices. You have to choose between this or this. That's it. There's no alternative. And in this case, the idea that we were forced to choose between fidelity to something outside ourselves and caring about it, paying attention to it on the one hand, and then the other choice is a narcissistic absorption in the self, I think that's a false choice. And I think when we're reading, on the one hand, everybody who reads Dan Taylor's book is reading the same text. You know, I mean, the words don't change when you read it, or if my wife Wendy reads it, or someone in China reads it and decides to translate it into Chinese, which I wouldn't be a bit surprised, you know, if that happens. We're all reading the same words, and yet, in another way, we're not, because we're all reading the book in different contexts. We bring different things to the book, and the proof of the pudding is always in the eating. You know, yeah. If someone's response to a particular book seems to be really all about themselves and wrapped up in some kind of excessive self-absorption, well, yeah, that's not good. It's probably boring, among other things. On the other hand, it can also be helpful, so that, for instance, that book we talked about a few weeks ago by Karen Swallow Pryor called Booked, that was an example of this genre where she combined elements of personal experience with the reading of a number of literary texts. So that part of the interest for me in this was that even though I was reading a book by someone I've known so well for so many years, there were things that I didn't know about the way Dan experienced faith.
Sure.
And one of them comes out in this subtitle, Telling Stories to Your Inner Atheist. Mm. Well, Dan says that ever since he was a small boy, he's had this internal voice that raises questions about what he believes and mocks him and otherwise carries on. And he borrows a phrase that the writer Richard Rodriguez used, inner atheist, to name this voice. And he doesn't just tell us about that. He dramatizes it throughout the book. The inner atheist, who, as you can see, is depicted here humorously on the cover.
Yeah.
The inner atheist speaks in parenthetical comments that are set in italics so that we know that's his voice. So I'm reading along the book, and I'm having these thoughts that you and I are talking about right now. And I come to page 52 to a chapter called Story and the Uniqueness of Belief and of Doubt. And it starts with a quote by Pascal. There are a lot of wonderful quotations in this book. It says, "The ways in which you believe and doubt are as uniquely your own as your DNA. I enjoy reciting creeds and traditional prayers together with others because it reminds me that I am part of something larger and much older than myself. But I also find myself scanning ahead at the next sentence to ask myself whether it proclaims something I actually believe myself and am willing to say out loud. And even as I say something I do believe without reservation, I believe in God the Father, maker of heaven and earth. I know that I don't believe exactly the same things about God or in the same way or with the same result as even my wife standing next to me, Dan's wife Jane, much less the African or Asian believer who may be saying these same words today half a world away." So here it was quite an experience for me, because I've been thinking about this, and lo and behold, Dan is saying better than I have said in our conversation just now. He's saying just what I was thinking, and he's talking not just about text, but about our experience of faith. He goes on to say, "Not to mention how we might all differ regarding gender language, Father, the Trinity, and all sorts of other issues embedded in what seems like a simple declaration." And now the voice of the inner atheist comes up. You see, now we get one of these little passages, and here's what the inner atheist says. "Excellent points. You don't even yourself understand the same thing from the same words from one day to next. A beautiful muddle." Well, you can imagine some people reading this book and being made nervous by that passage. They're saying, "Well, you're on a slippery slope, brother. You start saying, you know, I say these words and you say them, but we mean different things by them, and our experience of faith is different. And you're on a slippery slope to everyone interpreting the faith the way they want to." I disagree with those people, even though Dan's own experience of faith is not my own. I didn't know he had an inner atheist. In a way, it doesn't surprise me because, among other things, he is one of the two or three funniest people I've ever met in my life. And he has an ability at the drop of a hat to improvise a wacky or witty or ironic response to a situation. And whatever allows him to generate that also generates this voice that he calls his inner atheist. I would find it hard to live with an internal voice like that. It's not that I never have any questions, not at all, but I just don't experience faith the same way, which makes his point. And you can imagine somebody in some time, in fact, I can imagine some people I've been in contact with in church settings in my life who would grab him by the neck and say, "This is something that you need to have." If they were in one tradition, they might say exercised in a certain time and place. In other times and places, they wouldn't use that term. They wouldn't say you have to cast out this spirit. They'd say you have to do this. There's something wrong with you.
You have to have more faith.
Yeah, exactly. While my experience of faith is not the same as Dan's, I nevertheless agree with the way that he has framed the way in which all of us experience our faith differently, and yet at the same time, so I think, we're talking about the same God, we're talking about the same Lord, we're talking about the same reality that we all share. I think that many readers who are like me, their experience is a little different from mine, their experience is different from Dan's, and yet we share these convictions, and the way Dan would put it is we share the same story. He's very big on the notion that that's the best way to understand our place in the world. I think that they will have the same experience I did of both understanding another person's way of experiencing faith better, but also shedding light back on their own.
We all see in a glass dimly right now, don't we?
We do. We do. And we all look forward to the time when we see him face to face.